Welcome to the REI Diamonds Show with Dan Breslin, your source for real estate investment jewels of wisdom.
Welcome to the REI Diamonds Show. I'm your host, Dan Breslin, and this is episode 185 on reverse wholesaling with Kent Clothier of REWW. If you're into building wealth through real estate investing, congratulations, you are in the right place. My goal is to identify high-caliber real estate investors and other industry service providers, invite them on the show, and then draw out the jewels of wisdom, those tactics, mindsets, and methods used to create millions of dollars and more in the business of real estate. Today's guest is Kent Clothier, the founder and CEO of Real Estate Worldwide. Real Estate Worldwide, also known as REWW, operates three core units. First is the Academy, the online education platform. Second is SMART, an online real estate investor data source. And the third is the Boardroom Mastermind. And Kent is a real estate investor first and foremost, and having purchased and sold more than 5,000 properties since 2005. So today's episode is one that I've personally been looking forward to for years, almost since I started the podcast. Kent is one of the early single family real estate investor thought leaders who I personally paid attention to. We're talking 8, 10, 12 years now. And during the episode, you're going to hear my personal experience with Kent, including some watershed moments of my career, some like real big turning points that led me to where I am today. And those moments were spurred by ideas that Kent shared way, way back in my career. And he also shares them again in a few moments. Ready to roll?
All right, cool. Welcome to the REI Diamond Show. Kent, how you doing today?
I'm doing good, brother. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, for sure. Appreciate you blocking out the time to be with us. So just so the listeners who might not know who you already are, can you give us the background, how you got started in real estate and what your primary business model looks like today?
Yeah. So I've been doing it now for 18 years. Got started in the industry back in December of 2002. Started wholesaling a few houses, got really good at it over the years, started wholesaling, you know, hundreds of houses a year down in South Florida. Before I knew it, we turned it into a turnkey operation back before that phrase even existed. And that company still operates today. My two brothers and my father run it based out of Memphis, Tennessee. It's called REI Nation. We've basically turnkey about 800 properties a year in 9 different cities, manage about 7,500 properties for our investors. So that's our kind of primary real estate core business there. And on the flip side of that, I've been in the training, education, software space, showing other investors how to do it for the last 15 years. And so back in 2006, I started a company called Real Estate Worldwide, started showing people kind of what I had figured out, which was a process called reverse wholesaling. And put together a lot of tools to show people how to be really successful at it. And, you know, happy to say that we've had about 60,000 people go through our education over the years now, a little over 60,000. And the latest and greatest thing that I'm personally working on is I'm out here really kind of evangelizing that now's the time to really start getting into the seller financing space just because of all the things that are happening in the current real estate market. So a little 2 minutes there.
Nice. A lot of good stuff going on. So I've been looking forward to this episode particularly for a long time, Kent. I remember I got into business in 2006 and I kind of had these like ups and downs personally. And a lot of that for me had to do with like bad habits. I was alcoholic. I was partying, not living the right way. I got clean in 2005. I got in real estate in 2006, and then the money came and the money went to my head, and then I got unclean again in like 2008, and that lasted until 2012, right? So January 21st, 2012, thank God, was able to kind of put that stuff behind me for good. Right around that time, I was like trying to get the real estate thing going. It's like I had it, then went broke again, and then sort of had to build it back up again. But right around the 2012 time, I would think maybe 2010, 11, 12, I'm pretty sure that's when you came on my radar at that time. And it was the smart system, and it was vacant houses. It was Find Motivated Sellers Now. And it were like these little things that you just kind of like drop in passing. And I always encourage people listening to the podcast, anybody's podcast, always look for the stuff that's not always the main topic, but like small jewels of wisdom dropped kind of on the side. And that was one of the things and several of the things that kind of you accidentally did or intentionally just from sharing your experience. And we're going to talk about some of those things here today. But for me back then, it was like the tweak was direct mail. And I remember you were telling me like, okay, yeah, direct mail. And it was like, you're able to scale it up. You're able to start with like a small amount of money, but then you could go to like 5,000 letters, 10,000 letters, and even more. You could do 100,000 letters. And I'm thinking, okay, well, that makes sense. You know, I was the Google pay-per-click guy early on when it was like a dollar a click. You know what I mean? I was figuring it out. It's not that anymore. We all know that. Humor me a minute, though, Ken, and let's go back to like your first wholesale deal. Do you remember that? Do you remember any of the emotions or the things that you kind of?
I remember it. Oh, yeah. I remember it very, very well. Yeah, absolutely. I've done thousands of them since then and don't hardly remember any of those, but I can remember that one like it was yesterday. I had just come off a very tumultuous kind of my own ups and downs, if you will, right? So I had been in a previous life, basically from the time I was 17 till the time I was 30, I built a very, very, you know, wildly successful company doing billions of dollars a year in an arbitrage business. Had built the seventh largest privately held company in the state of Florida with the help of hundreds and hundreds of other people. And so I was, you know, I was in a place where success was just kind of in my DNA at that particular time. And then I got into a run-in with my partners, ended up walking out of that business, and over a 22-month period proceeded to lose every single thing I had built in 13 years. And so it was a pretty devastating blow at every level, emotionally, financially, you know, friends, family, everything. It was a really low for me. And so I stumbled into real estate investing by, you know, I'm a product of one of those late night infomercials that we all used to see back in the day. And so I went down, I was just broke enough that and desperate enough and in a place where I didn't know, have any place else to turn, that I went down, checked it out, and they were talking about wholesaling. And I had no idea that that industry even existed. I had no idea I could go and effectively control a property, flip a property, never really buy it, never really close on it, make $10,000, $20,000, $30,000. But that really resonated with me, and I made the investment, went and got the course, and went to work quickly. And back then, that was just pure grit, right? There was nothing strategic going on. It was just, I got to make this work. And so about 25 days later, something along those lines, I did my first deal and turned around, and never forget going to a title company in Coral Springs, Florida, and picking up my check for $8,200. And it meant everything to me because this was a very, very emotional for me. This was a completely new industry that I knew nothing about 30, 60 days earlier. I had no relationships. I had no name. I had no list. I had no public persona whatsoever. This was just me gutting it out and proving to myself that I could do something. And here was, you know, proof that I was capable. And I'm holding a certified check for $8,200 and basically broke down in tears. And then, you know, in my Ford Explorer truck, because it was, you know, everything to me. And so, yeah, I remember very, very well. You know, when it's really hard to appreciate the light if you don't have the contrast of the dark. Right. And so coming out of a really, really dark place and all of a sudden having something that was going right in my life that at that moment meant everything. So it wasn't just the money. It was what the money represented.
Yeah, you and me both. My check was $6,000. I remember my daughter was like 5 or 6 years old. She was with me for the summer. So I live in Chicago now. She was in Chicago living, but she would come back to Philly for the summertime because her mom moved out here when I kind of went off the rails, right? That was part of the price I had to pay. But I remember like, you know, I'm like overjoyed. She can't understand it. I had to bring her to the settlement company, nobody to watch or anything like that. So was there any moment during the deal? Was it like when you made the offer, Kent? Was it like the night before settlement? Was at the settlement table? But like what moment were you the most nervous throughout that entire process? And maybe like people who are sort of at the beginning or the people who've done deals remember that nervous moment.
Well, look, I don't know if it actually happened in that particular transaction, but I can tell you that certainly in many, many transactions since then, or just in business in general, just that what you learn to appreciate, especially a new entrepreneur, new investors, is that people believe that the nerves, people believe that moment of doubt or fear or whatever, that somehow that goes away. And the reality of it is that that's the good stuff. Whenever you're not feeling that, then that's a clear indication you're not pushing hard enough. And so I long for that. Like, I've tried to put myself in situations where I'm pushing the envelope, where I'm pushing myself further than what I know to be true. And so that I can, you know, kind of feel that energy all over again. That's like that. I look for that. The irony is that the newer investors or new entrepreneurs, they're doing everything they can to try to avoid it, to calm it. And they will quickly, if they're good, they'll quickly figure out that all of that struggle, what I call embracing the struggle, that struggle is all of the good stuff. That's where you learn the most. That's where you hone your craft. That's where you figure out what you're really made of. You know, those sleepless nights, those moments where you're like, oh my God, is this going to happen? Is it not going to happen? Am I going to be able to do this? You know, Kent told me to go and mail 10,000 letters, you know, and I'm laying out $5,000 here. Is this really going to work? All that stuff where that entrepreneurs work really hard to avoid because they're trying to get everything perfect before they do anything is actually, you know, kind of working against you. That faith, that understanding, that resilience, all that, you know, the power it takes, the character it takes to push through when, quite frankly, it isn't certain. You know, nothing's certain. That's where amazing, amazing things happen, at least in my own experience, that when you figure out that's actually where all of your best stuff comes from, and you embrace it and you go for it and you long for it, you'd be shocked at what you can really accomplish. It's no different than somebody who takes on physical challenges, right? You know, I want to figure out, like I'm friends with Jesse Itzler. And so I've done this 29-29 event where you effectively climb the equivalent of Mount Everest, 29,029 feet in 36 hours. And he rents an entire mountain in Utah, Vermont, or Idaho, and you just don't stop, right? And you don't know what you've got until you push yourself to a place that you just have never been. And so I think, yes, have I had those experiences? Do I still have those experiences? Yes. I try to seek them out. And my advice to a new entrepreneur is embrace it. Understand it's the good stuff. It's all the energy you're proving to, even when you are, it feels like you're falling down. It feels like you're getting beat up. You are learning what it takes to actually be wildly successful.
Nice. Yeah. Run toward the pain. I think one of my mentors early on told me, like, if you have a difficult phone call to make, some people are going to be inclined to write down, let's say, a to-do list for the next day. They put 10 things there. Phone call is like number 11. And then the day goes by and you run out of time. And he said, your most difficult phone call, the one that's going to make you nervous, the one you're scared the person's going to yell and scream, like, let's say, when you're making the offer on that first property or the 1,000th property, you know, whatever it comes, make that phone call first thing in the day. You're going to set the momentum. And not only that, you're going to check off something that's probably really important, you know, as far as moving the needle for you to get that done and then kind of move through the day. So, Absolutely. Kent, the time is now, right? I see it on the wall there behind you. For the listeners who are in the audio only, we have the video posted on the website, reidiamonds.com. Behind Kent, the time is now. This has been Kent's phrase for I don't know how long, and I've been looking forward to asking, what's the genesis, where did it come from, and what does it mean?
So I've had, you know, as you mentioned, it's kind of our mantra. I mean, heck, it's even tattooed on my arm here.
Nice.
I don't wear a watch. I wear a bracelet that says the time is now. And ironically, every time I look down at my wrist, that thing's right. Where that comes from. So, you know, I'm 50 years old now, and I've been in business for a long time. I've been in business, like I said, since I was 17 years old, and I've had three really eye-opening things that have happened in my life that really helped galvanize that message. One was losing a multi-billion-dollar business and realizing that I built a multi-billion dollar business kind of at the expense of my family, right? And I got conned into thinking, the big myth, I'm doing this for my family. I had a wife at home and a baby boy at home, and I was the guy that was getting to the office at 5 o'clock in the morning, not leaving until 8 o'clock at night, doing anything and everything I could to build an empire. And the reality of it was, is it was gone like this. And suddenly my kids and my, suddenly I'm divorced. My son hardly knows me, and all the things that really matter in life. I had never taken the time to really understand them. Now, I was a child when I was building a business, so some of it you can write off to youth and inexperience, but that really resonated with me. And then I had a mentor, my Uncle John, a few years later that passed away when he was 61 years old, and he had spent his entire life building a hundreds of millions of dollar company. And I admired him very, very much. And he was extremely wealthy, but he did the same thing, all at the expense of his family, running up and down the streets, doing whatever, traveling all over the world, doing whatever he could to bring home the bacon and make things happen. And got diagnosed, basically retired at the age of 60, got diagnosed with a form of cancer that he should have been able to recover from, has a 96% survival rate. But unfortunately, he didn't. Went into the hospital with pneumonia and never came out. And as he was calling for me, I drove to see him as fast as I could from my home in South Florida up to Daytona Beach, Florida. And as I got there, running down the hallway of the hospital to try to make it there for his last breath, I held his hand, and then he held up a little whiteboard, like a mini whiteboard, because he was all hooked up to a respirator. He couldn't talk to any of us, but he could write out messages. And he basically, the two messages that really kind of resonated hard with me was, one, celebrate my life. And number two, he said, I just wish I had more time. And so that really hit me hard. I'm sitting here in every regard, this guy was a success to me. And understanding that in his dying breaths, all the money that he had in the bank could not buy him the only thing that he wanted, which was one more moment. This, just another breath, another minute, another hour on the planet, and $10, $20, $30 million in the bank couldn't even buy that for him. And that really, really shook me. And then fast forward a few months later, I happened to be on an airplane with my wife and daughter, and the plane had to make an emergency landing. The entire plane filled with smoke. Panic was going through the plane. They diverted our plane coming down. The captain is telling us to brace for impact. And unfortunately, my wife and daughter had booked their flights on a separate itinerary from me. And so she's sitting in 26 ENF, I'm sitting in 19A. And in those final moments, when I'm having to look across an aisle or across strangers' heads, people screaming, alarms going off, a cabin filled with smoke, and having to say goodbye to my wife, and listening to my little five-year-old girl scream, daddy, daddy, and I can't get to her, and pulling out my phone and recording a goodbye message to my son, that was about as gut-wrenching as you could get. And between those three moments, and obviously we got on the ground, everything was safe, we ended up getting off the plane, but it really hit me in a very profound way. I mean, it gave me the ultimate clarity that I needed, that I'm really good at building businesses. I'm really good at making money. I'm really good at making things happen. But I'm also really good at making things happen on my terms now, where I don't build businesses that take me away from my family. I don't miss out on the opportunities to collect moments. I'm not in the business of collecting crap anymore, cars and watches. I'm in the business of collecting moments with my family, with my friends. I'm in the business of wringing out everything I can out of every single day. I believe in scaling businesses and creating impact in the world. And I scale businesses because they give me freedom. They give me the ability to do what I want to do when I want to do it, because that's what life's about. I have no interest in sitting down at a desk or anywhere, quite frankly, that I have to do it. My entire focus here is I'm in the business of creating options. I want to have the option to do whatever I want to do whenever I want to do it. And I want to show as many people how to do the same thing. And all of that kind of gets galvanized into the very simple saying, the time is now. Like, if you think tomorrow or next week or next month is promised, I got news for you. You are sadly, sadly mistaken. And to not be in a hurry to create the ultimate version of you and the ultimate life is a serious, serious miscalculation, because you don't want to be on a plane figuring that out, saying goodbye to somebody that you love and knowing you're about to crash. You don't want to be sitting there with $30 million in the bank and not have any valuable relationships with friends or family or moments or anything that you can look back on that somebody can say, man, this was amazing what he did. Now, the best thing they could say was he was an amazing business guy. And I'm not going to be that guy. And so that's what it's about.
Inspirational. Sorry to hear about your Uncle John.
Yeah, no, I appreciate that, brother.
I guess it's interesting because, you know, I'm pretty sure you were probably saying something along the lines of some of what you just shared. And this is 10 years, 8 years ago, the 2012 Kent Clothier, okay, Dan Breslin's watching videos moments. And I can't put my finger on, say, Kent said this at this time and I can't quote you, but I remember it being about purpose. And at the time I was in Philadelphia and I was doing a couple wholesale deals, barely paying the bills, keeping child support paid. And it was just this invigorating time. And for me, it was like, I had this realization. It took place over a year, 2 years, 3 years, but I needed to move to Chicago. I needed to pick up and move to Chicago. And that was my purpose. Like, I had to do anything, run through a brick wall, whatever it was. And I tried in 2011 to do that, and I failed. I was like renting a room in Chicago, and I moved back to Philly with my mom. And it was like, you know, right back down, smack to the bottom again. And by 2014, into 2014, Philadelphia's, the business was kind of getting up and going again. And I had to step out on faith to move to Chicago, where I didn't have the business going. And I did that, right? And it's been fantastic, a blessing ever since. All the way up to this day. And it taught me how to go into Chicago. And then I went into Florida, was doing business in Florida, was doing business in Atlanta. So we're in Atlanta, Chicago, Philadelphia. I never would have went to another market if I wasn't acting on a real sense of purpose, right? It wasn't just about making money, but it was to get to Chicago. And I found myself, my daughter now moved back to Philadelphia, going to school at Temple. And I'm like, oh, you know, now what, right? She's off at school and I have this like different purpose, but my purpose, just like yours, Kent, it kind of got to this point where, like, for me, it's to wake up and create a huge opportunity for people that are involved with my organization. And I don't do mentoring, with the exception of people who are like in my team. So there's maybe 25 people, and I put my, my effort, my energy, my growth, development, I do it for them, and I do it for the transformation in the neighborhoods where all of our flips take place. And that's kind of the purpose as we see it now. You talked about the time is now. You talked about the doing cool stuff. So the pandemic starts unfolding in March. And I came to the virtual wholesale mastermind. I think it was a virtual deal mastermind. I can't remember the name of it. You organized it. You brought a bunch of great people together. 6-week program, something like that. And I remember one of the videos you came on, and you're like seated in the front seat, driver's seat of the RV. I guess you're on vacation driving around the world. So you're like living exactly the stuff that you're talking while the pandemic was going on. There you are enjoying life. I mean, I honestly was nervous. I was a little worried. We put our foot to the floor, and luckily the real estate market kind of backed us up on that bet at the time. And I'm sure a lot of other people were nervous, but it seems like you kind of leaned into it and that didn't stop you, right?
Right. No, I mean, look, I have been as safe as everybody else. I'm not one of these guys that denies COVID by any stretch. I'm certainly not somebody who is an anti-masker. None of that, right? I mean, I live in California. We're in Southern California, for God's sakes. We're in the, you know, shutdown capital. But all that being said, with every obstacle, there is an opportunity, and it's just that simple. And you will find whatever you're looking for. Period. If you want to find opportunity, if you want to find the outcome, then you will use that lens, those optics, and you will find it. If you think the world is coming to its knees, and you think that the real estate market is going to crash, then you'll make that true, because you'll stop marketing, you'll stop being aggressive, you'll stop doing things. And all of our messaging was, no, you got to push in harder. Go right now. Count on your competition's mediocrity. They're going to run out of it. They're going to run out. You need to be running in. And the same is true with life. I've never driven an RV in my life, but travel is a huge part of you know, what I do with my children. It's what I do with my life. And luckily I've set up a business where I can do that. I can run my business just about from anywhere in the world. So yeah, we went and, you know, spent several weeks out on the road doing that. And I know we inspired a lot of other people to go do the same thing. And we made, you know, we made the most of what is in front of us. I just refuse to look at the world through a lens that there's not opportunity out there. I mean, again, think about it. Yes, a lot of people have gotten hurt, but there's a lot of businesses that have done amazing, right? If you're not necessarily in the restaurant business, or if you're not necessarily in the bar business or those kinds of things, airlines, et cetera. I mean, if you're at Zoom or Netflix or any kind of online trainings or any of those businesses all just took off, right? Just skyrocketed right out of the gate. There's a lot of places where there was opportunity. So that's what I mean. Like, yes, if you want to find doom and gloom, it's there. You can certainly find it, or you can find where there are opportunities. And I just, I've always been a guy that subscribes to the other.
Nice. Yeah. And you've always had this perspective. I mean, it's probably has to do with the arbitrage, the original business that you were in. It probably has to do with the level of success that you were able to build in the first business that led to the second, when you kind of applied these things to wholesaling. It probably had to do with Uncle John's mentorship and spotting these different trends. And you were kind of spot on with us having to put in this virtual. And we did that. We were making deals virtually, and it's not necessarily our favorite because we're flipping them. So we want to make sure we get eyes on it and actually see what kind of work we have. But we were able to do deals that we might not otherwise have been able to do as a result of that. So thank you for spotting the trend and kind of encouraging it. I know a lot of people are doing virtual only and have been, and that's kind of the model, and that's cool. But you've also had other trends along the way. It was the cash buyers back in 2014-13. It was finding the funds and doing the reverse wholesaling to find them. It was like kind of seeing where the market was and then making an intentional effort to do business in the market where the business was happening in the form of number of cash buyers. So what's the latest trend, right? We're recording this early February 2021. What's the big trend now coming down the pike, Ken, and how can people get ready for it?
Well, I mean, to your point, I love it when I'll go back to the comment I made earlier. I can count on my competition's mediocrity, right? And I think everybody should really think about that. And what that means is you're either part of it or you're not. And if you're getting caught up in what everybody else is saying, then you're probably part of it. And so everybody else is kind of has these, the real estate market's white hot. We have inventory supply problems. You know, we're not going to crash. We're going to keep going, et cetera, which fine. You play that game. I got it. What I can tell you is that you can do about 2 minutes worth of research and go see that Fannie Mae announced in December that in the year of 2020, that they had originated $4.1 trillion in loans on single family homes. That's what they did. And in 2021, they expect to originate $2.7 trillion. So that's $1.4 trillion that the single biggest controlling organization in the industry is effectively telling you they are going to yank this money out of the market. Now, while that's happening, they also expect that the housing market will stay stable, that it will basically grow at 0.8%. And so it doesn't take a rocket scientist to figure out that if the market's going to stay stable, number of units are still going to sell, but they're going to yank $1.5 trillion out of the market. How are people going to possibly buy these houses? And it can only come from two places. It has to either come from cash, or it has to come from people like us that are willing to step in and be the bank. And so what's the latest and greatest, you know, I don't know what I call it, trend, but the thing that I think is the single biggest opportunity in the market today is for people to educate themselves very, very well on how to become multidimensional, how to come in and buy properties on terms and sell properties on terms. And it's a scary, you know, thing to talk about because people just don't have the education. But when you get the education, it's a very simple process, easily done, especially for people that come with any kind of, you know, real estate acumen, that you can absolutely go and buy houses on terms, sell houses on terms, fill that void. And here's the best part, that if you buy a house and you put a renter in place, you have all the risk. Let's just be candid, right? The person that's, or the organization that's getting the richest on that transaction is the bank. They have borrowed money at 0.5% from people like us, or 0.1%, whatever rate of return they're giving you when you put it in the bank, and they're loaning it out at 3%, 4%, 5%, 6%, right? Infinite returns right there, effectively infinite. And then you own a rental property that you're putting a renter in there. You might be getting 6 to 10, maybe 12% on your money if you're doing great. But you also have all the risk of taxes, insurance, upkeep, maintenance, property management, all that, right? And I've been in that business for a very long time. A very eye-opening understanding, you know, for me has taken place over the last year and as it relates to these types of deals, that I can effectively go out, buy a house, put a buyer in there instead of a renter. I can be the bank. I'll sell, you know, I'll provide the terms. I'll get a large down payment from them. And I'm shifting all of the risk to them because they're the borrower. They're now responsible for taxes, insurance, upkeep, maintenance. And my return on investment is for 30 years. It's a 30-year note, right? So if I'm making 10, 12, 14% on my money, because I'm arbitraging the money, I've bought a house for 50 and I've sold it for 100, right? So I'm not only getting my, let's just call it 8%. I'm getting 8% on my $40,000-$50,000 here, but I'm also getting 8% on the arbitrage of buying and selling at a discount. So I'm easily getting a 15 to 16% return on my money. And by the way, it's a 30-year note. So I don't have to deal with the renters. I don't have to release it every year, every 2 years, every 4 years. I'm just sitting there infinitely building wealth. So there's one, the opportunity is right. Number two, the mechanism is right. Number three, if you want to build real wealth, this is how it's done. Uninterrupted compounding interest. And when you can create a note like that, that uninterrupted compounds over 30 years, you will just get ridiculously wealthy.
Yeah, I did one, and I probably should have looked into, I hired an attorney, so I thought I was going to be okay with a note, and a couple of the pitfalls that happened. I bought six rentals. One of these six was a $20,000 house in North Philly, right? So I tried to sell it for 20. I would have taken a small loss to get rid of it just because I didn't want it. I wanted the other five in the package. So I ended up, put it for sale, 2-3 months, didn't sell. And then I did exactly what you said. I put a spread on there. I put it $45,000 asking price, you know, double what I was trying to get. For one, the risk and the aggravation of whether or not I'm going to collect the payments, and two, the patience I'm going to have in order to collect the payments. And I did sell it to somebody, I think at 8% interest and $400-something a month, 10-year note. She put $8,000 down. I transferred the deed to her and I did a mortgage and a note because I wanted the deed out of my name. I didn't want to have kind of liability risk by keeping the property. But the point is, you know, I tacked on $25,000 with no real estate commissions. There was no closing cost. She had to pay all of the closing costs, and she was thrilled to get in there. Now, to be completely candid, I'm in the middle of trying to foreclose, and we have COVID restrictions, so I can't do that right now. But a couple of the things that I wish I did different on that deal is, number one, the note that I used was a note that the attorney kind of filled in the blank, and he didn't realize it was going to be an owner-occupied note. So it really wasn't structured right for me to turn that note over to servicing. So I had to like sit down and I'm like debt collecting and calling her. I had no way to turn this over to a servicing company. So it's like, I probably could get my payments, but I'm kind of busy doing the 283 houses that we did last year. Right. And you know, we're making bigger money there than me chasing her for the 400. And I'm fine. I'm foreclosing on a note and I have to wait a year or two, but the interest is still running. I'll get the house back. I still am, you know, paying the taxes, covering it, and it will be a win. And the market's gone up too in 3 or 4 years. So it's kind of continued to help lower my risk and increase my profit for that extra aggravation I'm going to have to go through to take it back. So there's the horror side of, you know, the note and terms deal.
So the lessons are, and this is, by the way, I'm glad you said that, because it's all you do, right? Everything you do has got to be Dodd-Frank compliant. Everything you do, you use an RMLO to do all the servicing. Paperwork's got to be super tight for everybody, quite frankly, from a compliance standpoint, because, you know, the better the paper there, to your point, the easier it is to service, but it's also the easier it is to sell if you ever want to sell the note. You're creating a real asset there. And if it's done right, it can be about as pain-free as you want it to. If it's done wrong, it can be about as painful as you want it to be, right?
Which is why
I'm glad you brought it up. But it doesn't negate the fact that it is the opportunity right now. Taking properties down, selling them with seller financing in place. You know, look, the way this is really playing out, so because I want to give everybody a really good, complete picture here. We're not talking about, you know, the Fannie and Freddie, the way they've taken this money out of the system is by making it harder for self-employed entrepreneurs to get loans. So that's the restriction they put in place, right? So 42% of the people that could get a loan in February could not get a loan right now, period. And by the way, all these statistics are openly available online. What they are doing is, if you are self-employed or you own your own business, you have to provide 2 years of audited financials for every LLC you own. Now, that is a massive deterrent from guys like you and me, right? There is not a chance with somebody like me who owns 100 LLCs and organizations that I'm going to go and have all 100 audited by a third party 2 years, right? Hundreds of thousands of dollars so that I can get a loan. And so they've effectively taken me out of the market, right? So guys like me and millions of others are the kinds of people we're talking about. That, you know, really good people, got great credit, got lots of cash, want to do deals, want to buy houses, et cetera, they are not bankable at this point in time. So it's not just the low end of the totem pole, it's all the way up that seller financing is going to play a huge, huge role in what is going on.
Yeah, you're right about that, Kent. So, you know, shift gears a bit. We said the words reverse wholesaling. I want to fill in the blank and say, could you, you know, quickly talk about what that is or was, and does it still work, and is it effective in certain markets around the country still, even though the market is as hot as it is, right?
It is the most effective way to wholesale properties, period. And I would argue always has been, at least since I rolled it out, and will continue to be, especially for a brand new investor. And the reason is that the data elements are even more, apparent now than they've ever been. Like when I started doing this, getting data around a market was very, very challenging. Nowadays, you know, through our own systems or through others, it's very simple to understand, hey, who are all the cash buyers in a very specific zip code? So I don't know one thing about the Philly market, but I could certainly tell you that in the next 3 minutes, I could know as much as probably most of your competitors. Maybe not as much as you, but I can definitely know about as much as your competitors. Meaning I can go into a piece of software and it will tell me, here are all the hottest zip codes. Here's where all the cash transactions are taking place. Here's the areas they're buying. Here's the prices they're paying. Here's their contact information. Well, and by all of this is public record, right? So that's what people need to understand. It's public record. Guys like me just clean it up and make it where it's digestible. If you get, you know, information from the county clerk's office, it's like reading gibberish. So what guys like me, we clean it all up where you can clearly see what's going on and peer right into a market. And so reverse wholesaling, it kind of starts there. You have to understand that there is a massive appetite in the market right now. Cash transactions make up about 35% of the market. These are investors. They're buying up lots and lots of deals every single day. And if you know exactly who's buying, exactly what price they're paying, and you market to them and start building a relationship, well, you have effectively taken 50% of the work out of the transaction, because it will always be easier to find a buyer for a house. It'll always be easier to find a house for a buyer than it will be to find a buyer for a house. So what most people are taught to do in wholesaling is go get something under contract and then basically call it whatever it really is. It's a variation of hope. That's what it is. And, you know, hope can manifest itself in, well, I threw it up on the MLS, or I put it on my website, or I emailed it out, or I did whatever I did. I'm doing these things. But at the end of the day, you know what you're doing? You're hoping. I'm hoping that I bought the deal at the right price and that somebody's going to want to buy it from me. And I can tell you, hope is not a strategy. What we do and what we teach people to do is go get the buyers lined up. They want to buy. They're all there right now. You know exactly who they are. Engage. Send out marketing. Get them to call you back. Get on the phone and say, hey, if I could sell you anything at any price in any neighborhood, how many you want to buy? What price do you want to pay? You know, and how many can you buy in the next 30 days all cash? Now I know when I have that, I'm lethal. Like I'm an assassin now. I can go into that exact zip code and say, my only function as a wholesaler is I need to go create that opportunity. If somebody tells me that they want to pay, they want to buy five houses in zip code 92037 for $200,000, the only thing I need to know without ever doing a real estate deal, the only thing I need to know is I need to go market in that zip code, go market for vacants, go market for expired listings, go market for tax defaults, go market to probates, whatever. I need to find a deal for something less than 200 grand. Because if I'm able to buy it for less than 200 grand, then the difference between those two price points is my spread. That's what I get to keep. So I'm out there trying to buy it for 150, 175, 180, whatever it takes. But every one of those deals I can get, I know I got somebody already lined up. Where everybody else that I'm competing with is running up and down the streets hoping. That's what they're doing.
Yeah, I made a lot of money on hope in the early days. I wish I would have heard that in the beginning. It's like you go with reverse wholesaling. You're finding the market first. You're figuring out who the players are. So like I kind of had to go to these networking events in 2006 and I'm talking to this guy and that guy and he might want this one and might want this other one. And it wasn't necessarily like finding out what type of fish, like what type of food in this specific neighborhood. And then the other part is like when you do the research and you find the cash buyers, it took out the underwriting piece. So in the beginning for me, I would deliberate for a day, 2 days. Maybe I'd forget to make the offer because it was just too complex for me to figure out how much to offer. I had no MLS access. Right. These software programs weren't available back then. And even if you have the MLS, it's like, you know, how much do you offer? Sometimes that can be, you know, a little bit of an enigma trying to figure out exactly what the right offer is compared to, you know, Bill Smith bought this one for $200,000. Anything I get it for under that, this is simple, clean math. It's 150, 160, 170, 180, whatever it is. And then I make a call and he takes it. Or I call the second or third person on the list I've already called and talked to and they take it. So direct mail marketing. You were a fan of this before. Are you still a fan of this? Is there a trend, relevant, good idea, bad idea? What's the deal?
Direct mail is still, if not the most effective, it's certainly one of the most effective mechanisms out there. And again, a lot of it has to do with counting on your competition's mediocrity. What people do with direct mail is they dabble. And again, they've seen some seminar, they've read some book, they've watched some YouTube video, whatever. And so they'll grab a list and they'll go mail 1,000 pieces to all the vacants in a certain area, right? And they'll do it once and they'll just go away. And, you know, I don't know when the last time was that everybody here has checked their mail, but as sure as I'm sitting here, I can pretty much guarantee that anybody that's listening or watching this, sometime in the last 30, 60, 90 days, you got a 20% Bed Bath & Beyond coupon, the big blue one. And it's the same coupon you've gotten for the last 15 years, right? Like every month or every 2 months. Now, the reason why they're doing that is because it works, but it only works because they keep doing it and they don't stop. What happens? You know, people collect them and then they bring them in and here we go. And they buy. The reason why you continue to get all of that junk mail every week, right? The penny saver, the coupons, all that. You may not be the ideal customer, but understand that in the game of direct mail, a 0.5% or 1% response rate. Right. So for every 1,000 they mail, if 10 people respond, it is wildly successful for them. When you're playing with that kind of math and you just know the numbers so well, direct mail is hard to beat. I know that if I go mail, you know, 1,000 vacant properties and I mail them 6 times over a 12-week period, simple math. I know we'll pull out of there 3 to 4 deals. I've mailed 6,000 pieces. I'm going to make $23,000 in every one of those deals, it doesn't take a lot to figure out that this really works. What I do know is that most people stop. If they don't get the one hit real quick, right? If they don't get that quick pop, they immediately throw their hands up. And I'm counting on it because all I have to do is stay in the game. That's it. It ain't that hard. Just that's why I keep saying that counting on your competition is mediocrity. This is a game of resilience. This is a game of repetition. This is a game of processes. If you stay in the lane and just don't stop, it is not a matter of if you will be successful. It's just a matter of when. It will hit. If you, the math always plays out.
Nice. And it's a little bit of a loaded question, right? So it's the same stuff I probably heard in 2012 when I was doing the letters by hand. And then I started ramping it up from there and actually scaling up and having the data to do so. You know, I would start with researching the probates on my own. I love direct mail too, personally, because it's kind of got staying power, right? The newspaper, you advertise there, they throw it away, it's gone. And the television, they watch the ad, it's over, it's gone. It played. The radio ad, same kind of a deal. Digital ads, same kind of deal. Whereas a letter has the ability to potentially be saved by a seller and called a year later, 2 years, 3 years later. Now, when I get a call from a letter that I sent 3 years ago, like, the timing is right, right? The time is now for that seller.
They had a life event.
Do business, you know?
They had a life event. Something changed.
Yep, exactly. Cool. Yeah, speaking of mail, for those who are watching.
I love that, brother.
We got the Kent Clothier custom video mailer for the Boardroom Mastermind. And before we get to our wrap-up questions, do you want to talk about Boardroom for a moment, and then we'll do our usual wrap-up here, Kent?
Yeah, so the Boardroom, I formed the Boardroom. Let me back up. So I was probably 2009. I was kind of in my career and got going, was doing very, very well. And I thought I was a lot better than I actually was, which is, I think, is a really healthy thing for somebody to experience, to get humbled a little bit. And I got invited to a mastermind. It was a marketing mastermind called the War Room. And I was the only real estate guy in there. Everybody else was internet marketing or physical products, that kind of stuff. And I quickly realized that I wasn't anywhere near as good as I thought I was. But two, even more importantly, I formed some real powerful relationships, partnerships, picked up a lot of insight, a lot of things that I brought back over into my business, not only in the education side, but in the real estate side, that kind of just put everything we were doing, on another level. And the reason why we've had the staying power, the reason why we're continuing to always be a market leader and innovating and all these things is because I continually put myself in rooms where I'm just not the smartest guy in the room. I have a peer network now that is as good as anybody's out there, right? I mean, whether it's Ed Milet or Jesse Itzler or you name them, right? Roland Frazier, Perry Belcher, Ryan Dice, guys that and girls that are just crushing the game. I think it's really, really important that you kind of get out of your own way, and you got to check your ego and get into a room where you are being held accountable to what you can really accomplish in your life. And if you stay inside of your own four walls and you stay in a place where you're kind of the quote unquote big fish, for lack of better ways of saying it, you're never going to really understand what your real potential is. And so when I was in the war room, I got pushed. And so three years later, I started the Boardroom in real estate, and it has been a wildly successful mastermind. We've recently voted, one of the top 10 masterminds in the world for growth by Entrepreneur Magazine. It's a collection. It's a collection of 100, 150 people. We get together four times a year. And if you've never been to a mastermind, it's a really simple process. You get there's two big benefits. One, you get to come in and network with a bunch of like-minded people, which that connection really helps to kind of push you, whether that's through partnerships or whether that's through mindset, whatever it is. But equally, you're going to get your opportunity to sit in a room for 30 minutes and you're going to share, hey man, this is the biggest challenge I'm faced with. And imagine if you're sitting in a room with 20 people, 20 just killers, and they are all focused on your one big challenge. You're going to get 20 ideas. Hey, by the way, I know a guy, here's how you do this. So somebody's just going to tell you, this is exactly how you fix that problem. that in and of itself, that one opportunity right there compresses time. And as we talked about, the time is now. You can go bang around for 3 to 5 years if you want, or you can just get the answer in 2 days and implement immediately. Equally, if you're sitting in that room and that same process happens 19 more times, you're going to hear 19 other things that you may not even realize are on the horizon for you. You may not realize that, oh man, looking around that corner or this corner, oh, I was thinking about going into that market, or I was thinking about doing that kind of deal. And somebody somewhere is going to share some insight that is going to save you an enormous amount of time and money. And so it's a really, really powerful process to get in the room of a bunch of people that are playing at a much higher level than you are, and helping you to achieve amazing results. If you want to get big results faster, you want to see what it looks like to become the ultimate version of what you can be, then a mastermind is a great place to start. And if you, you know, go read the book Think and Grow Rich by Napoleon Hill, one of the core principles they talk about is mastermind. That whether you like it or not, whether you believe it or not, doesn't make it any less true. The reality of it is successful people get in rooms and they share their ideas, they share their wisdom, they share their experiences. And that collective insight is how they get to achieve amazing results. And so, yeah, the boardroom's been around for a long time. I'm very proud of it. Once a year, we kind of open it up and allow a handful of new members to come in. And then they don't ever leave, man. It's a little fraternity where people want to, they want to stay and they want to continue to grow. It matters.
Nice. So Ken, other than Think and Grow Rich, is there a book recommendation or two that you would make to the audience? We have a lot of people who are doing a lot of deals in the audience, not just beginners here. So maybe even one for the beginner or newer person, and maybe one who's kind of got some scale and volume going for them already.
I only ever recommend one book ever. It's a book that meant the most, and applies to everybody at every level. Just go read The Alchemist by Paulo Coelho. It'll take you about one day. But I don't care where you are in life or in business, when you read that book, it will matter.
It's pretty cool. I'll second that recommendation. That's a first that anyone has ever mentioned that book. So that's cool. I'll make a note also in the show notes for anyone to take a look. So REI Diamond Show, we have the crown jewel of wisdom as our last question. Ken, if you could go back to when you were first starting, I guess it was 2002 or through 2003, right? And you had no deals on the board, no contacts. You were just getting started again. What would you do? I mean, the year would be 2021 and market conditions like we have now, but what would you do to get started again?
What would I do? You know, I think I did what I had to do back then. I think here's what I can tell you. The wisdom I would share with myself back there is, when your back is against the wall and you have, you know, what we say, like burn the boats, you know, when you have no other option but to move forward, you would be shocked at how powerful you really become. You may feel like you're at your weakest, but you're really at one of your most powerful moments right there. And I know you've experienced the same thing. Mm-hmm. You're in that desperate moment that you have to make something work for your children, for your livelihood, for whatever, right? For your self-worth. That is a really powerful emotion. That's a powerful moment to try to embrace and to try to revisit as often as you can. Don't forget. Don't forget what it feels like to have to do something. And in fact, I do it all the time to myself. I will tell myself probably at least once or twice a year, you know, if I didn't have everything I have right now and I had to go make $100,000 this month, what would I do? And whatever the answer to that question is, inevitably right behind it is, well, why are you not doing that? And I better have a really good reason. Because if it's in you and you're capable of it, then why aren't you doing it? And I would tell you that's probably the same advice that I would give myself going back, is like, don't ever lose sight of that you're capable of so much more than you really think you are. You just have to go. Stop getting distracted with, oh, what about this tool or this LLC or what training? At the end of the day, you have 30 days today to go make $20,000. And if you didn't do it, something horrific was going to happen. What would you do? You'd be shocked at how powerful that answer is.
I remember hearing that. So that's definitely some of the Kent Clothier wisdom that I heard years and years ago. and I didn't have the $20,000, and I somehow figured out how to go out and make the $20,000. Like, man, what a good spark those couple of words are. Like, that, there's a rewind the tape and repeat it again kind of deal. Kent, so how can listeners get more Kent Clothier, some information? Do you want to direct them to a website?
Yeah, man. I mean, the easiest way to go find me is just go to kentclothier.com or just, hit me up on Instagram at Kent Clothier or on Facebook, Kent Clothier. Make sure you look for the blue check mark every once in a while. You know, somebody tries to impersonate it. But yeah, just go to the verified accounts. I happily engage right there. So I'd love to help and connect any way I can.
All right, cool. Hey, I appreciate you getting us on the counter here. I got a couple pages of notes I snuck in during the video. A lot of great wisdom, and it's been a real pleasure. Thank you for coming on the show, Kent.
Hey, man, I appreciate you.
Off-market real estate deals. All of us real estate investors covet that rare, profitable off-market real estate deal, often bought with very little competition. The problem is many investors futilely try to develop their source of off-market deals through real estate agents or wholesalers, only to become frustrated when they discover that they are not the only buyer in that real estate agent or wholesaler's network. The only real way to have a consistent source of off-market real estate deals is to develop a business of attracting those deals. Enter the REI Deal Machine, originally developed as a resource for high-volume investors to build teams of drivers who are literally driving their market looking for rundown and distressed property. The REI Deal Machine simplifies the process of route tracking, lead generation, and literal push-button marketing to allow you to focus on the highest value skill set a real estate investor can build, and that is negotiating profitable real estate deals. For a limited time, you can register for free access to the REI Deal Machine at reidealmachine.com. You'll have a chance to play around with the system, take a demo, and actually begin using the app at no cost. So go register free right now at reidealmachine.com. And thank you for tuning in to the REI Diamond Show. Remember to review and subscribe on your favorite podcasting app. Just search REI Diamonds and click subscribe. Are you interested in receiving my weekly Big Idea email, where I provide the most valuable jewel of wisdom that I discovered during the recording of the most recent episode? Sign up at reidiamonds.com. And at that site, you can also access the 185 episode archive. Again, that's reidiamonds.com. So in 2020, my house flipping business, Diamond Equity Investments, bought and sold 283 houses. And we've done 49 so far this year. Well, mostly houses. A few of those were apartment buildings. And we currently have 112 more in our inventory. And here are three ways that you and I could do business. Number one, if you are interested in having access to the best real estate deals in your market, in other words, if you're interested in having access to deals that you can buy at low enough prices to actually make a profit after renovating and reselling, go now to accessrealestatedeals.com. And number two, accredited investors seeking double-digit returns can sign up for private mortgage investment opportunity emails at fundrehabdeals.com. And those are my deals exclusively. I don't do third-party hard money loans, so you would be passively investing in those Diamond Equity Investments deals I had just mentioned. Number three, finally, I am always buying houses that I can flip and occupied apartment buildings with below market rents. So if you have a deal that fits that description in either Atlanta, Chicago, or the Philadelphia region, please send me an email with the details. We are at the conclusion, my friend. Next up, we have Reed Goossens joining us once again to discuss land development for multifamily development specifically, and also discussing operating multifamily syndication deals at scale. So I'll catch you on that one.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the REI Diamonds Show with Dan Breslin. To receive email notifications of new weekly episodes, sign up at www.reidiamonds.com.